Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Bootstrap Web. I'm a little bit under the weather, so I sound funny. Brian, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing good, man. How's it going?
Good. I'm working from home today.
Yeah.
My wife does a lot of volunteer work. Today's like the big Halloween Spookorama event. It's taken over our lives. Just really excited to have it done today. I'm sure it's going to be a lot of fun, and it will also be over.
My three-year-old has been going everywhere and walking around our house in a Batgirl costume nonstop.
Yes.
Like, she has to wear the mask to the grocery store. Yes. And everything all the time. So
yeah. It's fun. It's cute. I have a Vampirina and a Ladybug Girl and a Maleficent walking around.
Yep.
We're just like, could you just put shoes on while you're playing soccer so you don't destroy the thing before Halloween actually comes?
Exactly. Exactly. But
good stuff. Cool, man. Yeah. So it's good to be back with you. I'm sure, like you, those pictures, MicroConf in Croatia.
Oof. Oh, man, dude.
What were we thinking? What are we doing here?
I know that they move it around every year in Europe, but I hope they do it there next year because I'm going. I mean,
I felt stupid. I was like, I have a team in Slovenia. It's right next door. How did I not come up with an excuse to go?
I know. I'm like, I got nothing to do this week. I could go to Croatia, but no.
it looked really beautiful. The talks looked good. You know, MicroConf is great because it's not too big and you really get to know people. And this looked like an even, you know, like a smaller version of MicroConf that we're used to in Vegas. I'm really curious to hear, to see what happens with MicroConf in Minneapolis this year, if it's going to be fewer people or more. It made me really excited for Minneapolis. I'm really excited for it.
I mean, I got to say, looking at those photos from Croatia makes me a little bit less excited to buy that ticket to Minneapolis.
Yeah, I don't. I feel you. Not nearly as exotic, yeah. But I think Minneapolis is a pretty place anyway.
Oh, I'm sure. I am psyched to see it though. I've never been there, and I always love going back to MicroConf. It will be interesting in the new place.
Cool. Yeah, there was some conversation on Twitter from a few women attendees saying how much more comfortable they feel going there than Vegas, because Vegas has like an inherently, you know, creepy factor. So that's good. Yeah, I'm excited. And you know, the talks look good. And, you know, I have a few friends that went and their Slack messages were, you know, singing praises. So it looks like Rob and Mike did another bang up job.
Yeah. And this is just like a quick note on that, like a third degree source here. Like I was listening to the Slow and Steady podcast, you know, other bootstrappers doing the podcast thing. Benedict was giving the recap from MicroConf Europe. And one note that's kind of stuck out to me, I was just listening to this like an hour ago. He said that there were a bunch of talks about SEO, which hasn't really been talked about I don't remember it really being talked about much in like recent MicroConfs. And it's just an interesting tactic. I don't really know really what was said there, but it just seems to me like that is making its way back around as like a marketing. Obviously, it's always been there. It's never gone away. But my quick take on that is that, like, I think in a way SEO has gotten easier because Google is better at surfacing things.
It's less about gaming the search engine as it is about just actually doing the right thing, which is helpful content.
Yeah, helpful content. But even before you even get to like the loads and loads of content, you can just optimize your homepage and like optimize your product pages. And you can have like that alternative to your competitors' pages, you know, things like that, that like if they're just optimized and you build your site with best practices and you make it fast and mobile and all that, like, so Process Kit doesn't even have a website out there yet. I'm launching the new site in the next day or two, but like, it's literally just like one page, barely any information. And I am getting leads who are typing in that they found it from a Google search, you know, like already. And I have like no content on there yet.
Yeah, that's interesting. Maybe I'm too short-sighted minded, but I always look at SEO as like a long-term thing. It's something that you know you should be doing, that type of thing. We have not emphasized it and invested enough in it. And now that we have more muscle on the content side, right? We have a director of communications, we have a marketer. And over the past few months, it's popped up as a real source of new trials. So we did a blog post about CBD, and that's getting a lot of search these days. And that turned into our best performing page on SEO. And then we optimized it. And then once we did the integration with Square that allows CBD, we went back to that post and updated it. And all of a sudden now it's a source of trials. So it's kind of popped up for us also over the past few months of, whoa, let's stop ignoring this side of things.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. I mean, you know, I bring that up because I'm now in this, this is my theme for today of what I've got to talk about here is that I just finished up a big new feature on ProcessKit. That's the dynamic dates rule, building up rules to automatically calculate tasks and stuff like that. So I just finished that, shipped that live a couple days ago. And so now I make the turn to marketing for the next at least 2 or 3 weeks. I'm trying to do a big push on getting a lot of the loose ends on marketing going. So I've got a couple of things on that. I'm launching a new website for ProcessKit. That actually should be live by the time you hear this. I'm going to push that live probably on Monday. So I want to talk a little bit about the new website and the new signup flow that I've been working on there. And then I've been thinking more about the marketing plan. So like now that I have the new website ready to go, I see that as like a marker in my mind of like, now real marketing begins. And so I broke it down into a couple of phases, like things to do right now, things to do in like phase one, and then things for like phase two. I could talk a bit about that. And also I have a launch workshop that like a live webinar workshop thing that I'm doing on November 5th. I could talk a little bit about that, but basically that's happening on November 5th. It's about like, you know, optimizing your processes to scale your company and your team. That's at processkit.com/workshop. So that's another one of these marketing things that I'm trying to put together as I'm doing this big marketing push in November. So.
I've seen you push out a few new features. I've seen you highlight them on Twitter. I think that's good that these individual little accomplishments, you're not just keeping hidden, but you're kind of publishing them as you go. Do you feel that you are starting to get that base of features that you wanted before marketing and then are now ticking over to the marketing side?
Yes. I think me turning my attention to the marketing side of things right now is that acknowledgement of like, okay, I've built all the core features are there. There definitely are important features that I have not built yet. And it is a little bit painful to like not work on that next feature for the next week or two. I still have calls every week with people who are interested in ProcessKit, and there definitely are requests for features that I don't have yet. But we're also getting new customers. Like there are conversions to paying customers that are still happening now. So like what we have now is purchasable for people. So I actually feel like it's more of a pain to me right now. The more urgent pain or priority, if you will, is the website does not communicate what the value proposition is and what the positioning is. So I'm launching the new website like today, which will get over that hump. And then that I think sets up the right value prop as you get into the product.
And then you can go back over to development once that base has been established on the marketing
side. I mean, as soon as I possibly can, there definitely are other features that I need to get on working, but I just can't do it all at once. It's just really hard to do everything. So I have to choose one or the other, like product or marketing, and trying to, you know, batch the marketing stuff together in like a two or three week span. Obviously it's not like I'm going to stop doing marketing forever after that, but it's like, I can't work on code while I'm thinking about marketing. It's just completely two different sides of the brain, you know?
Yeah, I've found that recently with my focus on the product side, I'm not having marketing ideas. It's just a different muscle and a different mind space. I feel bad about it, but I just know, okay, this is primary. And at least I have a few people that are focused on it. That feels good. I feel a little crazy because all I'm focused on is process on both sides. Our onboarding and sales process, where we changed from trial to application and demo, we knew that that was a living, breathing thing, that process was not going to be stationary for very long. So it's moving around now. So now we're getting too many demos, and now the person most responsible for the demos, Katie, it's too much for one person. And the real issue is that it's getting into a similar spot where if you do demos for everyone, you're doing 3 or 4 demos every single day, then you're not giving the love to the higher end the way you really should. So now we're starting to morph over into a recorded demo for the right people. And it's like, okay, now it's just going to keep moving, because you know, it was a great thing that she raised her hand and said, yo, this is kind of getting a little much. I'm very happy that she did that sooner rather than later, instead of just suffering with it for a few weeks. Because that feedback is super important, not just to the process, but also to the marketing team, right? What we talk about internally a lot is healthy tension. And one of the points of healthy tension is between marketing and success, because marketing wants to maximize the number of qualified demos, but success only wants to do demos with the absolute best. So that feedback of, hey, I'm getting a lot of demos, but they're not all great, the marketing team needs to know that sooner, so that they change their positioning and are more, they do a better job of repelling the wrong people. That tension point, it was like the opposite of mediating. I like created a fight on purpose. I like noticed one thing, but the marketing team wasn't quite aware of it. And I was like, you guys need to actually fight. You guys need to hash it out between what's happening here. And then they like started having their own conversation. That's not what led into wanting to record. That was kind of, they did that on their own, but it did lead into that conversation of, okay, this is a point of tension that we need to communicate through and not just kind of hide from each other.
I love the recording idea. That I went through that same sort of iteration with audience ops. Like I did live one-on-one demos with people, like with a slide deck with every sales lead that came through for like a year. It got to the point where I was just like a robot in my office, like just reading off the same script every single call. But that was great because it helped me optimize it. I changed the slide deck like four times. I got better at the delivery, and then I recorded it, you know? And then that's the one that like everyone sees today, you know?
Yes, but you can't cut out that learning, that pain.
Yeah.
So now it's going to be super interesting to see if not only can we ease up the amount of pressure on the person doing the demos, but if that also allows us to take on more people faster. So actually lead to revenue growth. What we'll then need to look out for is what's the churn rate of the people that are going through that process versus the handheld. And the amount of work doesn't disappear, right? It moves from the person doing the demos and doing all explanation, and it'll move over into support, because that person is going to come into the product with less of an education, and then they'll start interacting with support. So it's like this coordination. So it's fun to try to figure that out. And then I turn over to the product development process, and I feel like my IQ goes down by 50%, because I'm just not as good at that.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's weird. Like the more I've been getting into the code and learning programming and building software, I really love that part of it, but I actually feel like the better I get at coding, the worse I get at marketing. And you know, it's like, but it's really just using a completely different part of the brain and a different kind of energy from day to day, and a different like idea flow. That like with marketing, there are just so many small ideas and small little things that you need to create and ship out and publish. Like you could do four or five different things in a single day, whereas with coding, it's like I could hammer on a single feature for a week or two, you know, or longer. And you know, just to get back to some of the things that you were saying, in my case as a solo founder in this like launch and rollout phase for a new thing, there's product, there's marketing, and there's actually that third piece that you were talking about, success, or like I'm thinking about it in terms of like converting trials into customers. And that's another whole batch of work that needs to be done, right? There's like, this gets back to that thing of like all of a sudden everything is behind schedule, right? And there's not enough hours in the day. So like the product, there are features I still need to build. I think the product's pretty good right now, but definitely have to get back on that as soon as I can. Marketing, way behind. I've got more things to talk about in this episode all about marketing now that I'm focused on that. But I also need to get to better onboarding. Like when you first land inside the app, like I need to have something there to orient them, like, hey, here, these are projects, these are processes, here's where you can begin. I've got none of that right now. I've got some very basic like MailChimp emails that go out during the trial, but nothing inside the app. It's kind of just figure it out and check out the docs if you want to, you know?
Right. It's like, what if those two actually work? What if marketing works and the product is there? Then you're going to have real people starting to use it. And then all of a sudden it's going to open up a third front.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like we've had people in there and trialers have converted. Like, we have paying customers right now. But I still talk to a lot of people, and they're like, yeah, I was kind of lost when I first got in there. And
yeah, it is the assumptions made by the people building the product. There's often a large gap between what you think you've made clear and what people actually take in. And you can, it's easy to blame them because really nobody reads anything. It's incredible, but it's still your fault anyway.
Yeah. That's just more to-dos. I'm thinking like I should create like a short 60-second video to welcome new users or something like that, to like to pop up when you first land inside the app or something, just easy to get. Like, I don't need to design a whole onboarding wizard or anything like that. I just need to give them some information to get started.
Yeah. We've done that over the past few weeks. We took our major feature sets. So how to set up your checkout page, how to set up your upsells, and how to set up your product funnels, those three main things. Ed did an enormous amount of work on it and wrote out a script and did a screen recording. And then we found a video editor. And this video editor also has a good voice, so he does the voiceover also. And he just elevated the videos significantly because we felt we needed it, because we're charging $500 a month as a starting point. You kind of want to deliver something polished on that first experience. We talked to other video agencies, and it was 10 grand plus for the project. And we ended up getting it for somewhere, you know, far, far less. So really a video is going to end up costing around $500 to have produced.
That's cool. I've been thinking about that too for the homepage video for the marketing site, because the new site has this big box where you click to see like an explainer video, and I have not created that video yet. I usually create all the videos myself, and I could edit them in ScreenFlow and stuff like that, but like I'm thinking I might do that again and then hand off like my finished, like what you're saying, like hand off my finished version to a better video editor to somehow improve, I don't know, or give me feedback on it.
Yeah, I'm happy to go through that with you. Ed did it really precisely. So there's a Google Doc with between this second and this second, this is what's on the screen and this is what you say. And then there's a transition and then you say this while this is on screen. So you left very little margin for error, but it's worth it because it came out great. And then what we're doing with it is putting it at the end of onboarding and also permanently on the page inside the admin where it's most critical. All in anticipation of just fewer people that talk to us for an hour before coming into the product.
Yeah, for sure. Cool.
Cool, man.
What do you have for today?
So not too much, and I have a short episode because I have to go to Spookorama. So I want to talk about something that I heard on John Buddha and Justin Jackson's Build Your SaaS podcast. So they were talking about the proliferation of these types of podcasts that we have from the Bootstrap community. A lot of the ones you mentioned in the last episode that you're listening to. And the way Justin described it was a commons, like a bootstrapping commons, where people are just putting out ideas and feeding off of other people's episodes. And he touched on an idea, and I want to kind of bat this around with you. So the great thing about it is that it does feel like a conversation. It's a conversation, but what we're used to these days is Twitter, and that conversation is so instantaneous. It's in real time, almost, right? It's just delayed by when you read it and then you respond. So it's still very, very short turnaround time. Podcasting, if you record on day one, it gets published a week later, then someone listens to it even on the same day, records a podcast responding, goes out a week later, it's minimum 2 week turnaround in the conversation.
The delay in podcasting, you know, especially if you have somebody else edit it like we do, like what you're hearing today is us from a week ago. Probably more than a week ago, because if we drop it on Thursday, you might not get around to listening until the following week, you know? So it's like,
yeah, today's October 25th.
Yeah. And like, I listen to the pods of all my friends, and then I email them or I DM them about like, oh, that thing you said, yeah, that's cool. They're like, yeah, that's like 2 weeks old. So like,
yes. So even when I wrote myself notes for what to talk about in today's episode, and I'm looking at it and it's old as hell. The notes themselves are old. So all the ideas in my head are old. I originally wrote it on October 15th. So 10 days ago. So anyway, what this sparked in my head was, how do we get to an audio version of Twitter? How do we get almost real-time conversation, like almost like Voxer, but recorded and in public? I immediately pinged Justin. I was like, you are in the best position of pretty much anybody on the planet to make that happen. And that is a massive idea if you can do it right. It is really about designing the experience, both the recording and listening experience. And you mentioned something that Justin does something similar already.
Yeah, I've been meaning to get around to figuring out how guys like Justin are doing this. I don't know if this is a feature of Transistor or some other. I know that like somebody on my team on Audience Ops, we do podcasting there, and they suggested some tool. I don't remember the name of it now, but where you can take an existing podcast and clip like 60 seconds of it into this tweetable audio clip. And it actually and it shows you the waveform thing. And Justin's been doing that on his tweets, and I've seen some other people. Actually, just the other day, Kalen Jordan on Twitter, I guess he has a new podcast, or I think it's new, where he's publishing these like 2-minute podcast episodes. You know what? They seem like 2-minute episodes, but I think they're pieces of longer ones, you know? And it's video and it's audio. And then the other thing that I like about them, I don't know if all of them do this, but I saw on Justin's that the audio clips also have the transcription in the Twitter graphic.
Like in real time.
And that's perfect because like sometimes I'm reading it like in bed at night. I can't actually listen to it, you know, but I could read it.
Yes. Yeah, I hope that that's a feature and not just one of Justin's many skills. If that's a feature in Transistor that you can clip something and then share it and have it be done that way, it's like it feels like a big step forward. And then like the all the way is that I record it and send that out right then.
I remember Ben Orenstein co-founded this thing called Briefs. Briefs.fm, I think it was. I don't even know if that's still a thing. It might even still be functional. I don't know. Ben, if you're listening, you gotta start selling that thing again. So, but that was like the whole idea. It was like a brief podcast that you could record and publish like really quickly. I love that idea.
Yep. We'll see where that goes.
And like, yeah, like if you can just do it right from your phone and just, you know, talk, record, click button to tweet. That's it, you know.
Bang. Yes. It feels inevitable.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, there's probably tools that do this. We just don't know. We're just not cool enough to know what they are. So,
you know, it's like our onboarding and your onboarding, right? It's still their fault if we don't know about it.
Exactly. Exactly.
not necessarily.
Right.
So that's it for me. And the other, I had a really fun experience. It was almost like a bonding experience internally. So we have an application process. And what that really means is that we don't let everybody into our software tool. And for many people, they're used to that just not being a factor. They used to just get out of my way. Here's my credit card at most. Let me get a free trial. And so some people get pretty testy with us. They get angry that they can't just get a link to sign up. And we had an email yesterday where someone went on a bit of a rant and said, you know, basically, how dare you? I make enough money to pay and all this other stuff. But what they called us choosy little bastards. Seems to me like you guys are behaving like a bunch of choosy little bastards. And
why,
that,
thank you.
Like, so I heard that. I saw that, you know, our success person posted it like publicly, like, this is what just happened. This is what someone just called me. I was like, guys, this is a moment to take in. That is exactly what we're going for. And so I tweeted that out and people really liked it. Look, I've seen worse, right? We've all gotten people who are genuinely angry, like choosy. It's not like a terrible thing, but it was like a funny bonding moment inside the company where we're all like, we're getting that on t-shirts. Like, come on.
Yeah.
Card hook logo up front, back of the T6. Exactly. So I think there's a lot to the morale of the past few months.
Did the guy end up getting in?
No. Because we have three categories, right? We have category one, that's like our absolute ideal customer, right? Like a native deodorant, like big direct-to-consumer, Bomba socks, like one of those, knee undies, whatever. Then we have a category two where we're like not 100% ideal or maybe good characteristics, but revenue isn't that big. So it's like a good opportunity, but not great. Then we have category three, where category three is, okay, maybe they're not quite there, but the DNA sounds right. They're good to work with. They're nice people. We want to help them. Like, let's get them in. And we have category four. Category four is assholes. It doesn't matter how much revenue you make. If you're a category four, like, you can't come in because you're going to make us miserable. And that's not cool. And our pipeline and our product and therefore our lives used to be full of category fours. Just flushing that out of the system with this demo process has helped the morale so much. Because everyone feels kind of like choosy bastards, that they're like, no, this is our business and we get to decide if we want to work with you. And it's not because we're being jerks. It's because it's what makes sense for us and for you. And so it was like the culmination of the few months of this transition, that someone calling us that was like, that is, we did it, basically.
We all know the more choosy you are, the more focused positioned that you can be in your marketing, that's just a better marketing and sales strategy. But at the end of the day, it's also about, especially when you have a team, we're in business so that we get to work with the people that we like working with, both in terms of coworkers and customers. We definitely have that mentality at Audience Ops. I mean, we have clients churn out or not sign up in the first place. They'll churn out within 2 or 3 months if it's just clear that, like, they were expecting this big custom do anything at will agency kind of situation, or they're just like super difficult to deal with personality wise. Like, we sort of have, it's not like there've been very, very few cases where we've had to like fire a client, but like they just sort of churn themselves out and we don't really have much tolerance for that. It's really just like either you click or you don't, you know?
It's right. It's neither side being like bad. It's just a fact. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work.
Yep.
Yeah. So that's it from my side. How about you?
So the other two things that I have here are the new website and like that sign up path. It's actually pretty similar to what you were just talking about. And then I wanted to just talk a little bit about how I'm thinking about marketing from now going forward, now that I have the new site. So like with the new website, which you should be able to see live now at processkit.com, because I'll be pushing it live today or tomorrow. So up until now, it's been this like pre-launch sort of website where it's like a big manifesto, enter your email to get on the early access list. You'll get an invite whenever I get around to sending you your invite, basically. And I still have plenty of people on the list who I have not actually invited yet. I'm sending about 100 invites or so every week or two. What I've been doing is if you personally reach out to me and say, hey, I'd love my invite now, like, you'll get your invite within the hour. What I'm moving to on the new site is I don't want to necessarily open it up to everyone and lose the opportunity to A, capture the email, and B, get some research out of them before they sign up. What I currently have in place is enter your email address, that gets on the list, and then the next page they get to a survey and they fill out a survey, and a lot of them write a lot of really valuable info in these questions that I ask. I read every single one, and the really good ones I flag and I often just invite them to a call.
Cool. So the site experience right now is really pre-launch, show interest, and then talk to us. If you really want it and you're going to give us all this info, we'll take the info.
Yeah. I mean, I am sending out batches of invites anyway to the list, but if you write a lot of really good info and the answers show me that like you're a perfect fit, like, I'm probably going to reach out and try to talk to you. In the new site, I am making a path for them to sign up immediately. But I'm still getting those checks, like still checking those boxes. So basically they come to the website. The language that I'm using on the buttons is called request a trial. You click request a trial, you enter your email address, that gets you onto my email list. So I can, if you don't end up signing up, I can start following up with you. They fill out that and then they get to a second page. They're not yet signing up for the trial, but the second page is, it's now a shorter version of that survey. It's now 4 questions. And these are one line inputs. What would make ProcessKit a win for you? What are some of the other solutions that you've tried? How many people are on your team? And how did you hear about ProcessKit? That's really the 4 bits of information that I really want to know from every person, you know? And then the button below that says, now continue to your trial. They click that and then they can go sign up immediately for ProcessKit.
Okay, so some changes there.
It's definitely faster to get them into the trial. but there's like a two-step process to get yourself into the trial. You have to answer a couple of questions. They're not required. You could even skip past them if you want to, but...
But the site itself is changing from more of a manifesto to pique your interest into a, these are the features, here are some screenshots?
Yeah, it's a SaaS marketing site. Graphics, videos, features, benefits, pricing is right there on the homepage. It's all there, you know. This is the site that I expect to grow with over, or at least the next two plus years, you know, probably more.
So then there's still a research component, but it is at the end of the day, self-serve. They can start a trial without talking to you.
Yes. Like further down the page in like the FAQ and stuff, there's what if I want a demo? Then there is a form for that where they could book directly onto my Calendly. I'll still outreach to people to get on calls, and my email automation flows will, you know, try to pitch them on a Calendly demo call if they want to.
And does that mean you're also going to invite the rest of the list, anyone who hasn't been invited?
I don't know yet. I think I've already gone through at least 50% of the list. And I think I have gone through the most engaged people. I've sort of prioritized them first. So the ones that are left are less engaged, or they recently got on the list like last week, and then I invite them. So now it's sort of like, why have them wait a week when I could just have them sign up right now, you know?
Yep. Ooh. That's exciting, man. Almost there.
Yeah. I mean, like with the new website, really the goal is to just drive trials. Like right now I'm focused on marketing, and by marketing, I mean the objective is drive traffic and drive trials, and converting trials to paid. That's another effort. That's, that's things to do later. But right now it's just get trials, you know, and not have them completely dependent on like manually sending invites and stuff like that. So
nice, man. I'm looking forward to seeing the marketing site.
Yeah. I'm pretty happy with it. It's basically ready to go. I've just been tying up some loose ends. So on that note, the marketing plan going forward, I sort of think about it in like three phases. Phase zero is like things to do just right now, like almost like preparation. So like launch the website is one. The other thing that I've been meaning to do is redirect opscalendar.com to ProcessKit. Because that was kind of the precursor to this product. And that site still gets a chunk of organic traffic, like pretty good organic traffic. And I want to redirect that traffic to ProcessKit. The other things I could do here in like phase zero is like, so in my personal email list, you know, my newsletter that I send out every week, I'll also have like an automated email to new subscribers to let them know about ProcessKit. I have the same email already in there for like audience ops and for Sunrise. I need to add ProcessKit. And I also want to integrate it into my Productize course. So I'll start promoting ProcessKit a little bit more heavily to people who've purchased Productize, because I'm getting more sales for that lately because I recently changed the model on that. That's a whole other story. But there's a whole section in the Productize course about building processes. I need to start calling more attention to ProcessKit there.
I mean, that just sounds like more discovery, more serendipity, people that are already in your orbit.
Yeah, exactly. I call that phase zero because it's not even really starting. It's just like pieces that should be in place.
Right, know? Things that you should do.
Yeah. So phase one really is what I want to start working on. And that is, there's a couple low-hanging fruits, like things that I've done before that have had some pretty quick results. So like getting ProcessKit listed in like the 50, 60 plus directories, like SaaS software directories out there, you know, like Capterra and like, you know, all those. I could have an assistant just fill out all those forms for a day. The other thing is I could go onto Quora and answer some questions. These are things, those two things I've done for Ops Calendar, and it did sort of like instantly drive a bunch of traffic and leads. It's not things that like, you can do ongoing. These are just like one-time efforts that you spend a couple of days on and just do it. And then the other big effort is process templates. So we have the ability in ProcessKit to import like what we call kits, which is like a set of processes and set of custom fields and stuff. And so I'm going to create like one for like new client onboarding and one for blog content production and one for podcast production and then have a dedicated page, SEO optimized, a ton of content about that process. And then click here to like download this kit for your ProcessKit account and sign up for ProcessKit. That'll be a bunch of work to do. I need to do that. And then the other thing to do in like phase one is I want to start a done with you service, like a productized service, a step beyond like concierge onboarding. It's actually like working with your team for like a month to improve your processes, get you all set up on Process Kit, train your team, you know, have a couple of calls and consultations and stuff. That'll be a paid service. And I've already spoken to a bunch of people who are interested in this. And out of that, the goal early on is to get some good case study content out of that, like turn those early clients into case studies, turn those into publishable pieces of content. That sort of like rounds out like phase one, like things that I should do in, I would say, within the next like 2 to 3 months to try to do all that. And then like after that is like phase two. So hopefully, you know, we've got a decent chunk of like first customers and things are showing traction. And then that's when I can start to look to things like ongoing content. I'd probably use audience ops to do blog content, maybe have them produce a podcast with some targeted content there and try to drive, you know, more SEO juice and content and keep the list going there. Do PPC funnels and things like that. Maybe look at like podcast ads or things, you know, just open to other ideas, but I can't really get that until I have the main, you know, marketing pieces in place first. So that's what I'm doing.
Makes sense. I love template marketing so much. It's been one of the most painful experiences on the marketing side that we haven't gotten that going. I think people love templates and it shows them, it helps them visualize like the gap between where they are now and where they want to get, whether that's visual or process. Yeah, I'm interested to hear more about that. And then the service sounds smart, could be some additional revenue, and more than that, could bulk up a few case studies and also a few people that I think it'll teach you a lot about what it takes to get someone onboarded and what that skin in the game does for their longevity as a happy customer.
Yeah, exactly. If they pay, you know, a little bit and then and they invest the time in doing it with me or with someone on my team, then it's sort of like an investment in like committing to Process Kit as our tool for our team, you know.
Yeah. And it does sound like the type of tool that once you start using and start, you know, organizing your business around, it can have a long time frame of how long people stay on, which helps the LTV, which helps justify more work up front.
Yeah. And it gets back to this thing I was talking about a while back about the ideal customer. It's definitely a tool that if you have a team, it starts to become valuable. If you're solo, you know, you might get some value out of it, but maybe you won't pay for it. If you have a team of like 20, 25 plus, like, yes, it's made for that. But at that level, you probably already have some tools that you're pretty married to, and it's too much of a lift to switch. But the people that I talk to, especially agencies and some SaaS companies who have a lot of like, especially SaaS doing like concierge onboarding services, if you're in this realm of like 4, 5, 6 people and you're growing and you have a lot of processes, but you've been bouncing around between Asana and Trello and spreadsheets and randomness, that's the group that I really want to catch with just in general for Process Kit. But I think this done with you service is perfect. Those are the people who resonate with it the most because they start to feel the pain. They feel like they've been meaning to get around to improving their processes. They just need some guidance. And if I can get them all set up at 6 people, then they can grow into Process Kit with 15, 20 people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. That sounds about right. I'll give you the bit of feedback from the Carhook point of view. We are in that target. We're 25-ish, but the number of people who would benefit from Process Kit on this side is actually a group of around 5 or 6 people.
Yeah, I've seen that too, like a small department or a small group. Yeah.
Right, the engineering team doesn't really need it. They have their Jira process and that's like, you know, half of our lives focused on that. But the success team right now is 2 people. And so our next hire is the UX designer. And after that, it's most likely another person in success to focus specifically on more onboarding. What we find is when we help people with the onboarding, they get success. And when they get success, they stick around. It's worth a lot to make sure that's right.
You know, it's funny because a bunch of the already paying customers on ProcessKit are SaaS companies. It really resonates with agencies, client services, but it's sort of to my surprise that SaaS companies also resonate with it, because I thought SaaS were just so, it's really just all about the software and customer support. There's not a whole lot of process in there. But if the SaaS has this like concierge onboarding piece, the customer success piece, that does usually, you know, involve three or four different team members. And I've seen it from ProcessKit customers who get value from it. And in some ways, they're even better than agencies because it's SaaS, so it's even more predictable. It's even more process-oriented. Whereas with agencies, it's a little bit more work to get them to follow a process, you know?
Yeah.
So cool. That's interesting.
Good stuff, man. Well, we're all looking forward to seeing the marketing side and then hearing about that next phase of of your journey. Cool, man.
Just add it every day.
Yeah. Speaking of journey, I'm off to Spookorama.
There you go.
Cool, man. Good to catch up. Thanks for listening, everybody.
Happy Halloween, folks.
See you.
Later.